Okay, and we're back. Let's talk about the First Amendment here. Without the First Amendment, what do we have? Really nothing. We have slavery. We have subjugation. We have utter obedience to an authority that will not allow us to investigate, to research, to think as we will. And it does not just limit itself to speech. It has to do with thought. Because if you're afraid to speak, you then become afraid to think. With us right now is Reverend Ted Pike. Ted has been fighting for, well, close to a decade and a half to try to protect our First Amendment. And as we say each year when we confront these challenges to our freedom, our God-given right to speak and think as we wish, called hate bills or anti-hate bills in our Congress, we have again a need to ask all of you to stand up and make the frauds and phonies in the House, especially in the House, understand that our First Amendment is supreme above all. Ted Pike, welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good to hear your voice, sir. You sound fine.
Yes, I've been working pretty hard, trying to keep ahead of the people like Conyers and Representative
and Barney Frank
and so on.
Yeah.
But we are keeping ahead of them. We have basically exposed a conspiracy back on April 2nd. Representative Conyers, in literally the last minutes of the House session,
mm-hmm.
before the members of the House departed for their states, he put in his much more insidious, longer federal hate crimes bill there. It's H.R. 1913. He didn't think anybody would notice, but I had been talking to Jackson Lee's legislative expert on, I believe it was Wednesday, and he told me what was going on. I called over the judiciary, and sure enough, Conyers was in the process of introducing that.
Let's stop with Conyers for a minute. This man's been in the House for how long? 30 years?
I don't know, but he's a veteran champion of the federal hate bill going clear back to 1998. I know that.
Oh, yeah. Who is he working for?
The federal hate bill, of course, is the brainchild of the Anti-Defamation League.
There you go. Thank you.
ADL is very proud on its website of claiming that it has originated, has inspired 45 U.S. state hate crime laws,
mm-hmm.
and they make no bones that they are solidly behind the big federal hate bill. Certainly, that federal hate bill is the big red apple on the top of the tree as far as ADL is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want, because that will give them total power as sitting in the driver's seat of persecution of any kind of dissent in America, whether it's against Islam or it's against immigration problems or Latinos and whatever, or homosexuals, Jews, Zionists, and so on. And they want to have a hate crimes bureaucracy in which they will have total federal control going all the way down to the local police, local DAs in every state in the union, uniting federal law enforcement and local law enforcement.
In a way, it's kind of like the Federal Reserve, but it has to deal with our freedom of speech and freedom to express ourselves as we wish, as administered by a bureaucracy that has nothing to do with the government, because this really is an outside agency pulling strings to get this done. It's not a national policy. It's a private policy, a private special interest group being pushed through corrupt members of the House and the Senate to try to subjugate what's left of this country's freedoms.
Yes. Well, in the House, Conyers is pretty much one of the major spokesmen. Also, Barney Frank is emerging as a very eloquent and feisty promoter of the hate bill. Over in the Senate, of course, Senator Edward Kennedy is declining and out of the picture right now. But his successor is his son, who is being appointed basically the heir apparent of the hate crimes promotion
mm-hmm.
agenda. And he hasn't, I don't believe he has quite introduced the Senate version of the Kennedy hate bill, but it should come very quickly.
Back to Conyers. Why is this bill more insidious, and what is it about the bill that is so?
Well, it has much more than H.R. 256, which was Jackson Lee's kind of a decoy bill, which came in the first week of January. The whole purpose of this decoy bill, which was a shortened, streamlined version, was to tie up the religious right, because they want to do things in the proper way, and they're not going to begin a big promotional program when you have an indefinite bill number and so on. And the strategy has been to put in this decoy bill, which will take the flack, take the criticism, and so on, but it really doesn't claim to do as much. The original bill basically said was to give the federal government the right to come in and investigate and punish violent hate crimes in the states. It also gives the federal government the right to punish any person who publicly incites acts of violence against protected groups. For example, a pastor reading out of Leviticus, declaiming that homosexuality is an abomination, could be tried as a principal if his rhetoric were considered an influence upon some skinhead or somebody like that who actually attacked a homosexual.
And, pretty subjective.
But those two are basically the basic tenets of this first H.R. 256. What Conyers' bill wants to do, however, is much more extensive. It will give the government power to come in and adjudicate and prosecute violent hate crimes, but also hate crimes of any kind, even fairly minor misdemeanors.
Give us an example.
Give the government the right to make those a federal crime. It also gives the government to come in and prosecute felonies in the states which are entirely unrelated to any kind of bias motivation, hate crime. And so this is a vast increase of the government's power to come in and take over a state's rights, especially in law enforcement. Also, this bill will empower the government to set up a federal hate crimes bureaucracy. It allocates whatever funds are necessary to procure personnel, get all the personnel it needs in order to prevent hate crimes in the state. It will also give the government the right to come in and overthrow any hate crimes verdict in the states that it doesn't like. And it'll make it impossible for any state to decline to have a hate law. There are about five states and unions now who are saying, we think our traditional English laws are quite sufficient.
Yes, indeed.
To prosecute all kinds of hate crimes, any crime, for that matter, and they no longer will have that right. They will have to submit to a federal hate crimes bureaucracy.
This is unbelievable. It gets worse every year. It gets, as you say, the word insidious certainly applies. I'm not sure if it goes far enough. This is overthrowing so many of our basic rights. I mean, we could spin this out into many different areas. It is.
Well, both of these bills basically elevate specially protected groups like homosexuals to special status, special privileges, special rights to law enforcement, investigation, criminology, all those kinds of things. You see, under our standard law, our traditional English law, if a punk goes out and assaults a little old lady trying to rob her of her groceries and he knocks her to the ground, well, that's a crime of battery or assault and battery, that would result in maybe a $500 fine and a couple hundred hours of community service. But if someone were to commit the same kind of assault upon a homosexual and call him a queer in the process, suddenly that is considered much more grave, much more serious in the eyes of the federal government, would result in a 3-year prison sentence, probably at the minimum as a class or felony. The federal hate crimes law triples every offense. So a misdemeanor suddenly is jacked up to a felony, a class 2 felony or so, class 3 felony. And
haven't we got enough people in prison?
Yeah. But all these hate laws are extremely punitive. The punishments are wildly disproportionate because of this allegation that bias has motivated them. And the ADL, in all of its literature, all of its videos and everything, unrelentingly states that any kind of bias is very, very, very bad and thus deserving of triple penalties.
It will be the end of things as we know them now, even though things as we know them now aren't particularly good. That'll do it. There'll be so many laws, allegedly, on the books now before long, so many cases in court. The country will grind to a halt, which, of course, would make complete domination over it much easier for a number of reasons. Be right back with Ted Pike in just a minute. Okay, back to Reverend Ted Pike. Ted, last time we talked, we discussed the issue that the Christian right was not rising up and offering as much help as it had in the past to fight these truly evil laws. They talk about banning hate. You can't legislate hate out of someone's mind. If it's there, it's there. So what about the Christian right?
Well, I have been very vexed at the incredible silence by the religious right over the last 3 months. But just today, we had a pretty good article in WorldNet Daily by Melissa Farah, in which she does mention the bill number, H.R. 1913. She mentions how Frank has, Representative Frank said on his website that they'll be running through the hate bill this week, probably without hearings. So that's a good article, WorldNet Daily. That's I give them a B for that. And then Concerned Women for America came in today with an article, a good article, mentioning H.R. 1913. Also, a Liberty Council, which is a slightly smaller group, came in with a full-length, updated article today for the first time. So there's three today that weighed in. Traditional Values Coalition has been doing a yeoman's work for the last week with a very powerful couple of pages right on their homepage of their website. But unfortunately, the two biggest New Right organizations, probably the biggest, Family Research Council and Focus on the Family, are mysteriously silent. Here's this bill going through the judiciary this week, and these supposedly trustworthy sentries on the wall are saying absolutely nothing in specific terms about this imminent threat to freedom.
All right. Barney Frank, Conyers, people will ask, well, how can these things even stand a chance if they're that bad, Ted? What's the deal here? You got the Judiciary Committee. Can't these people look at a bill and understand what it would do to what's left of our freedom and liberty to speak in this country? Don't they get it?
Well,
are they all?
We certainly have some feisty Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee.
Right.
There's no doubt about that, and they would love to stand up and fight if they could. Actually, one of the things that I've been promoting just in the last several days, and I want to thank you very much for putting up that e-alert over the weekend, because we, as you know, Conyers, according to Barney Frank, Conyers was not going to have hearings. And this is outrageous, because this legislation, I believe, is the most dangerous legislation that's ever come through Congress.
Well, it sounds
yet,
like it. Yeah.
Yeah. And yet, you see, 2 years ago, Conyers learned the hard way that it's really a great risk to open up debate on the hate bill. What he did 2 years ago, largely as a result of a lot of flack coming in from the listeners to Alternative Talk Radio and your program in the first several months of the 110th Congress, was that they put so much pressure on Conyers that he relented and had 2.5 days of hearings on the hate bill. What happened was 11 different feisty Republicans, they made a spectacle of it. They made a circus of it, criticizing it, introducing 11 different amendments and so on. And this criticism and mockery of all this hate crimes legislation and other bills spread throughout the House of Representatives. And so what happened, of course, eventually was that the hate bill was killed. 180 Republicans joined with 77 Democrats to kill the hate bill after it had been approved by both the House and the Senate. So Conyers does not want to do that again, and he was hoping that he could slip that through quietly, but on April 9th, I got wind of his statements on his website. Actually, they were reproduced in the Washington Blade, a homosexual newspaper, and I trumpeted that around, and we got a lot of calls coming in this morning. We got a tremendous calling coming in even as early as the opening of Congress around 9 o'clock in the morning, and by 10 o'clock this morning, Conyers could see the handwriting on the wall. He issued a statement to all judiciary members saying that he would, after all, hold at least one day of hate crimes hearings. Now, this gives an opportunity for these Republican these real Republican watchdogs, men of relative integrity in Congress, to go out there and raise up all kinds of objections, tell what's happening in Canada and Europe and Australia and so on, and may again to dramatize the tremendous peril of this. And we're hoping that this Wednesday, Conyers hasn't given a time yet, but we're hoping this Wednesday it'll be on C-SPAN, I understand, under the Judiciary Committee, and we were hoping that it'll get a lot of publicity, a lot of people in the House and even the Senate will perk up their ears paying attention to some of these objections.
Let's hope so. What are the guarantees that it will be televised on C-SPAN?
Well, that's what I was told by Chavez, Representative Chavez's office this afternoon. Chavez is very much a conservative. He's very adamant. He's going to fight the hate bill hard if they can have a hearing on Wednesday. And that's what he said. He said even the liberals were telling us callers that's what's coming out of Conyers' office. So we're going to hold him to it.
All right, good. Okay, very good. Back in a minute with Ted Pike as we continue to survey this latest challenge to the Constitution and our way of life. Okay, back with Ted Pike. How many years, Ted, has it been since you began your fight? And how many bills have been introduced that have been turned away so far today? Do you have a count?
Well, I was first alerted by the old Spotlight newspaper in 1988 that the ADL had sponsored a nationwide model anti-hate law competition, which was open to law students in law schools throughout America. And Joseph Ribicoff from Whittier College in California won the ADL's grand prize. He was given this at the big conference at Hofstra University in New York. And what the Ribicoff wanted to do was to penalize with criminal penalties any Christian conservative organizations who are critical of homosexuality, not only laying fines, harsh fines upon the leadership, but also fining and criminalizing any member of that national organization who also criticized homosexuality. So this set the pattern right there in 1988. The ADL then went on to create its model anti-hate law, which it then spread out through the 1990s and eventually has convinced 45 U.S. states to adopt some version of that hate law. Of course, you can document this all. The ADL is very proud of all this history at ADL.org.
Right.
But as I mentioned earlier, in 1997 or 98, in that general period, ADL entered into Congress their big federal hate crimes bill, basically the same one we're fighting right now. And they expected it to be a shoo-in. They thought this was a wonderful idea and that most members of the House were in favor of it. But there was a small contingent coming out of the House Majority Whip's office and a small contingent of Republican conservatives there who saw through it immediately and killed it when it was first put through in conference. And that set a pattern which has lasted for many years, in which the ADL was able to persuade everybody in the House and Senate basically to vote in the bill, but these diehard Republicans would keep stripping it off in conference. Now, the hate bill in one form or another has been defeated five times, and I have played an instrumental role since about 2001. One after another, we have been able to get enough calls going in, enough diehard resistance that things go wrong. And I believe God Almighty has caused confusion, ridiculously stupid behavior on the part of some of these hate bill advocates like Kennedy, causing the hate bill just when it seemed like they had it in the bag, caused them to lose it. And I'm believing and hoping and trusting that Almighty God will again, against all odds, give us victory in this session of Congress.
Obama, the sock puppet, the groomed and created president, has made no bones about it. He'll sign it as soon as it gets to his desk.
Yes, and not only it, but quite a few other of these same bills, like ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and we also, there's a kind of a grouping of these Orwellian anti-Christian bills which are coming through. There's been a lot of talk, you know, just this last week about the supposed danger posed by right-wing terrorists who frequent internet websites.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, you can read anything on the internet now, and that can get you picked up instantly and put in the database of suspected.
Yeah, and one of the reasons they're hyping that is they not only want to push the hate bill through, but they also want to revive their homegrown terrorism bill, which was introduced last year, and actually it passed overwhelmingly in the House. I believe Republicans were very naive about its real intentions, but it languished in the Senate Homeland Security Committee, as Lieberman's committee,
sure.
Last time around, but you can bet they want to get that back in, making it a thought crime for people on the Internet to express ideas that might be an influence to incite some kind of radical terrorism in unstable souls out on the receiving end.
Do these bills include the phrase, hurt the sensitivities or the feelings of people? Are we back to that again?
Well, all bias crime legislation has that premise in it, that feelings of people are just as vulnerable and damageable as their physical bodies. And you see, when you say a crime is a indictable federal offense because
right.
of its motivation,
right.
And it causes some kind of violent crime, that sounds like a pretty good idea to get federal enforcement, federal laws making that against the law. The problem is that all of these speech crimes, hate crimes, bias crimes laws are written in such ambiguous language, and their basic premise is that we can quantify the thoughts and motivations which drive people. So basically, these laws are so spacey, so amorphous and nebulous that they're just custom made to be put in the hands of some liberal federal judge who can flesh them out and complete the thought, complete what he thinks that hate crimes laws should punish. And, of course, what he thinks is that we should punish thoughts, not just because they cause violent crimes, but because they cause emotional damage to groups
right.
such as particularly homosexuals, Jews,
right.
Chicanos, etc.
Well, it could be anybody, though, any group, any minority, so-called minority.
Right, and
any.
Increasingly Muslims are picking up on laws which were originally created by ADL.
Which this whole thing could turn out to backfire in their face.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, at my website, www.truthtellers.org, we have an excellent 10-minute video. It's called Hateville Jihad.
Oh, it's very good, yes.
Well, thank you. And what we do in that video is we go through the cases in Canada, France, England, Australia, etc., where liberals, now we're not talking about just fundamentalist Christians, or we're not talking about right-wing extremists, we're talking about liberals in England and Canada, Jews even, and so on, who are being taken to hate crimes courts by the local Muslim council. And the Muslims are seeing a good thing. They want to get on the hate crimes bandwagon as a specially protected group, like the homosexuals, like the Latinos, like the blacks, like the women, having sexual elevated rights and privileges and protections.
Well, like I say, we have to go to the break, but if we are unfortunate enough to someday have one of these bills signed into law, watch what happens. The perpetrators themselves may rue the day they introduced it. All right, we'll be right back. Ted, this issue of Muslims, a rapidly growing segment of our population, and others, turning around and using a hate bill against, shall we say, the ADL, the JDL, or any other organization, either directly or indirectly, like claiming that they are being persecuted by Zionist agents and influence in this country, which probably would be fairly easy to prove in some cases, as these two groups obviously hate each other down to the DNA genetic level.
Yes.
So have you heard of any Muslim groups kind of licking their chops, saying, all right, let's have it. We'll go right after them.
Well, that is a conceivable scenario if Muslim groups attained that kind of power. Actually, in the United Nations, just this last month, in the Human Rights Council, the Muslim 56 Muslim nations dominating that council were able to agree on an international statement banning criticism of Islam, hopefully under penalties. But that still doesn't have enforceable teeth. So what the power structure here is right now, Jeff, is that the Jews, the supremacist Jews coming out of ADL, the Neighbor If, are in such total control of the hate crimes bureaucracies and Gestapos and tribunal systems in all these countries in Canada, Europe, Australia, and so on, that the Muslims are coming and taking advantage of a service there which the Jews are providing them, that the Muslims are not anywhere near the power to be actually in the driver's seat of hate crimes enforcement that the ADL, the Neighbor If people are.
All right, so logically speaking, how much help do we need, when do we need it, and what can people do now? And I do hope that the so-called Christian right can get its act together and realize that that they certainly, perhaps as much as any group, needs this not to happen.
Yes. Well, right now we had a real victory, relatively small, but a real victory in the House Judiciary Committee. We smoked out Conyers. We forced him to a certain extent abide by the law and legislative process and the will of the people, and to have a hearing at least one day this Wednesday. And that's powerful, because that slows down the hate bill's passage through judiciary. He was hoping he could just shoot it under cover of darkness without anybody knowing about it, and boom, it would be right on the floor and voted in as it was 2 years ago. So we have we've outsmarted him. We've anticipated his moves at every stage, but we are not naive. We know that even this hearing this Wednesday, you're going to have it stacked with liberal pro-hate bill Democrats.
Oh, sure.
They may indulge
right.
Republican amendments or mm-hmm. attempted amendments and objections and so on, but they're going to move that hate bill through anyway. They're going to vote as a block, according to the party line, and we can see probably the hate bill staying fairly close on schedule to going to a floor vote by the end of the month. And so what we really have to do is everybody has to continue to raise a howl. Most effectively probably now the howl would be to your own two senators and your House member from your district. You see, the next big fight, and probably the fight we stand the best chance of winning, is on the floor of the Senate, because there the margin of victory or defeat for the hate bill is only a couple of votes. If we can not only call our members of the House, keep the pot boiling there in the House, but also take some time to call into the Senate and express your anger and intolerance of a hate crimes bill, then we'll be preparing the Senate for viewing this as a red hot issue that they're going to have to pay attention to what their constituents are saying. I'll just give, if you don't mind, a toll-free number.
Go ahead, please, Ken.
Yeah. For House and Senate.
Mm-hmm.
The familiar toll-free number is 877-851-6437. Again, that toll number to your member of the House and the Senate, 877-851-6437. And the backup toll number is 202-225-3121. Again, that backup number, toll number, is 202-225-3121. And when you call, don't worry if you don't even know your member of the House or Senate, because as soon as you call one of those numbers, the Capitol operator will give you the ask her, and she'll give you you just give her your zip code, and she will send you very quickly to those offices. And just tell them, please, don't vote for any hate crimes legislation. Don't vote for H.R. 1913, mm-hmm. a Conyers very dangerous hate crimes bill. And if we can continue to generate controversy, generate debate and exposure, you see, this hate crimes bill is so shaky to begin with, so presumptuous, so tyrannical, and on, that it does not do well in the light of public scrutiny. That's why the Conyers, all these people, prefer to add it on as riders to bigger popular bills or move it in under the cover of darkness and a subterfuge. They do not want it debated in public. So let's get the debate out there. People should stimulate debate in their churches, the local talk radio, on. And, of course, come to truthtellers.org. Mm-hmm. We are the world's primary educational resource on hate crimes theory and abuses and so on. Truthtellers.org, we have excellent 10-minute videos. Jeff has watched all of them. And you can get a wonderful education just in a few minutes.
Oh, it doesn't take long at all. Do we not have any constitutional attorneys of note who are standing up and saying, wait a minute, we've got plenty of laws on the books to deal with issues. We don't have to have a federal bureaucracy set up here. Is anyone coming forward and talking intelligently about
That's
this?
That's basically the argument of the Republicans in judiciary.
Uh-huh.
And that was the argument of George Bush when he promised to veto the hate bill, that it was all very redundant, it was unnecessary. The truth of the matter is that out of some 13 million crimes reported by the FBI every year in their Uniform Crime Report, only something like 8,000 are alleged hate crimes, and that's about 1/15 of 1% of crime in America. So we don't have a huge epidemic of hate crying out for federal intervention. This is all a manufactured ploy by the ADL to get control, even more control than it already has, of the federal hate crimes agenda.
All right. What is the word from the courts? Do you have any read on the courts, the federal courts, in terms of what may or may not happen if something really horrific like this were to be passed? Talk about a clogged court system now, folks. Believe me, this would be totally ignite.
If you want to see what happens in court, just take the case of the 11 Christians in Philadelphia who were arrested for witnessing to homosexuals during a huge gay pride parade in 2004. That was an egregious violation of their civil rights. Lynn Abraham, who is the a national director, executive board member of the ADL. She was behind that outrage. She threw these Christians into prison for 21 hours. She stalked them with 7 different arrest warrants, threatening $47,000 in fines, as well as 47 years in prison, excuse me, and $90,000 fine. So this was way, way over the top of any kind of a case which the city of Philadelphia could sustain.
Right.
And yet, as it went forward, upward through the appellate court system of Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, it was so corrupt that eventually federal judges, Supreme Court justices, pronounced that the city of Philadelphia was justified in what it did to the Philadelphia 11. So the very last recourse we should ever consider is trying to put this into federal court, or even worse, maybe the Supreme Court. What we have to do is we have to keep this evil genie in the bottle right now, keep it suppressed. Hopefully it will die out with all other medievalisms that try to encroach on, reassert themselves in modern society.
Right.
We just have to fight now, make sure it doesn't get established in law, because it'll be just like Roe versus Wade. Once that kind of thing is passed,
oh, it'll never end.
It'll be difficult to extricate.
Right, right. I concur. Ted, on behalf of an awful lot of Americans and people of good conscience and goodwill from all points in the political spectrum, you've been just amazing. I can't imagine, well, I know pretty much where we'd be without you. You are the world leader. You have done more than anyone else and committed your life to trying to save this country from evil. That's all it really is. It's evil. There's no other way to in my estimation, define it. People want to take away your right.
I have a calling from God to speak this truth of warning to the nation. I have a obligation under the dictums of the book of Ezekiel that if I don't speak, stand on the wall and warn the people when they enter.
Right.
I lose my own soul. So I do it out of compulsion. I do it because I have a very great burden. It's not just another political issue.
Well, I'm honored to help, and I'm here to help, so keep me posted, Ted.
Yes.
All right. Reverend Ted Pike. Okay, thanks for being here. Another 3 hours zoomed by. Back with you tomorrow night. We'll talk then.